Hello, and welcome to the Bitcoin Roundup podcast presented by Coinbits. We bring Bitcoin news, hot topics of conversation, and deep dives into a variety of Bitcoin topics to you weekly. We are Coinbits, a Bitcoin financial services company. Check us out at coinbits.app. This recording is for informational purposes only. No investment or legal or any other advice should be drawn from this content. And as always, consult an advisor before making any legal or financial decisions.
Excellent. Well, thank you for coming on. Let's just get started here. I know that we have some really interesting topics to discuss, and I just want to introduce the space really quickly to kick us off here. So Coinbits is an on-ramp for Bitcoin, and we're adding new features every day so that we started out as like a roundups app, and which means that you link a credit card and you buy things with that credit card, and then we round up your purchases in the nearest dollar and buy Bitcoin with the difference. It's a really easy way to get started with Bitcoin without having to worry about when and how much to buy. Since early days, 2017, when we launched, actually we're the oldest Bitcoin-only company left standing here. We've survived two bear markets. So it really speaks to kind of the long-term strategy of the company, thinking about building really carefully and deliberately. And since then, we've built out several new features. We can do scheduled buys, so like recurring buys. We call them saving habits. You can withdraw your Bitcoin. We believe in self-custody very passionately. You can send Bitcoin to other users. We have a Bitcoin IRA coming out soon. We also have a Bitcoin Cash Advance product coming out soon, allowing you to access fiat liquidity with your Bitcoin stack. So a ton of interesting work going on at Coinbits. Check us out at coinbits.app. And just another note to say that nothing you hear in this space is intended to be or constitutes financial advice. Go do your own research find out if Bitcoin is for you and make your own choice about that. So let me hand the floor over to David, who is from Coinbits, and allow him to introduce our guest today.
Thank you, Dave. So today we'll be talking with Ben Justman. And Ben, if you could just pronounce one more time the name of your vineyard, just so I get the pronunciation right.
Of course, it's called Peony, Peony Lane.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. So Ben is, a winemaker at Peony Lane Vineyards and a Bitcoiner. I've seen you've posted some awesome, tweets and done some really cool interviews about, wine, Bitcoin, steak, et cetera, and health and wellness. And I guess the first thing I'd like to ask you is really, how did you get into Bitcoin? What drew you to Bitcoin, and kind of how it changed your perspective on wine, health, wellness, et cetera?
Of course. Thanks for having me. I found Bitcoin in, mid 2020 and bought in late 2020. But the story started when I got really into personal finance right after college, when my parents cut me off, and just was really psyched to learn how to budget, learn how to manage my money and save and be risk off, but do it the right way and understand that you got to take risk, invest in index funds, have a high interest savings account and everything. And then in 2019, all the interest rates on savings accounts went to zero. And so that was kind of my baseline of, all right, cool. So I have this savings. It's just basically keeping up with inflation. I'm not making any money. And when those interest rates went to zero, I realized that I was losing money and there was nothing I could do about it. And so I just kind of started looking for other things. And in that time, I started my winery and started making wine. And then about a year later, I moved back home to my hometown, Peonia, where the vineyard is, and built a house with my dad. And during that process, I moved in with my best friend from high school, who I didn't know it, but he was a Bitcoiner. And so just in our conversations, it obviously comes up a ton. He's like the smartest guy I know. So I take what he says seriously and just start learning about Bitcoin along the way. So listening to 4 hours of Bitcoin podcasts while I'm building my house. And in those couple of years, it was this serious, like, real understanding viscerally of what low time preference means, because I was starting a winery that takes 2 years to get any sales, 3 years to really get anything, and building a house that was a year-long project that I would live in for potentially the rest of my life. So it was really this crash course on low time preference behavior.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. That's like, there are so many things there that really kind of encapsulate what a lot of Bitcoiners strive for with, like, you know, health and wellness and like self-sustenance. I'm wondering if you could, you know, tell us more about your vineyard, right? Like, I've noticed in your interviews, you talk about how the location in Colorado makes it unique. I'm wondering if you could kind of walk us through that, like, you know, what makes your wine unique? Why does like the soil matter and all of that?
Totally. So every wine is just going to be completely different from the baseline of whatever soil there is, obviously the winemaker doing it, and the climate that they're in. So where I'm growing is the highest elevation grape growing region in North America, in Western Colorado. And that high elevation creates these huge shifts in temperature from day to night. So during the day, it gets real hot. I mean, these days up to probably 90 degrees, 95 in peak summer. And then at night, it still gets down into the 50s. So huge temperature swings. And those swings allow the grape ripening to kind of slow down during the night and really speed up during the day. And what that expresses itself in is a really vibrant fruitiness and this like electric acidic zing. So if you have a variety that one can grow well in these conditions, because it is hard to grow at high elevation in Colorado, it's a shorter growing season. But if you have a grape that grows well in those conditions and expresses well with those characteristics, it creates a pretty special wine. And so I specialize in Pinot Noir. And it's the only red that has shown a lot of promise here, where you can also grow Gewürztraminer, Riesling, and Chardonnay pretty well. But personally, I grow Pinot Noir. And going back to low time preference is that we basically don't add anything, or we keep his hands off the process in the grape growing process, because we want the grapes to be hardy on their own, to be able to withstand frost or anything. And we don't want to disrupt the microbiome, the full collective of living organisms within the vineyard. So we're not spraying stuff to kill things, kind of just letting it be. And what that does is it allows me to do a wild fermentation once the grapes are picked. So literally I just pick the grapes, crush them, take the stems out, and they ferment on their own without me adding anything. And most vineyards will add like a commercially grown yeast, which you get a more consistent product. You kind of know exactly what you're going to get, but you lose that sense of place, where with a wild fermentation, you get a very more unique flavor and, in my opinion, more interesting, but it just tends to be more complex because you have a lot more going on than just this one yeast strain during the fermentation process. And then all through the winemaking process, I'm keeping that same don't touch things consistency, like don't add stuff, don't manipulate the flavor, just let the grapes express as they're meant to express. And in that, you get a wine that is really just so connected to the place that it's made in. I'm not disrupting that, but also you get a wine with no additives. And what, from my experience, that's a wine that doesn't really give you a headache. And you just feel so much better drinking wine without a bunch of stuff in it.
Wow. Wait, that's crazy. If you, that last part, I was like, wait, you know, I think that if more people knew that, right? Because a lot of, I think a lot of people, you know, don't like, they like, might like wine, but like, you know, the older you get, you know, the more the headaches come. One thing I wanted to actually ask you about is, how common is this natural process that you just described? And like, are there any drawbacks to it? Like, it sounds awesome, but I'm wondering, like, you know, why isn't everybody doing this?
So it's a lot easier on a small scale. That said, there's like a lot of risk in not, I'm kind of just like literally just leaving things up to nature and be like, well, it's worked for the last 15 years. I hope it works again whenever I ferment. And it always does. So I'm not terribly worried about it. Another thing is I'm surrounded by organic orchards. So there's no one around me spraying tons of harmful chemicals that would disrupt things for me. If you're surrounded by a bunch of other places that are growing conventionally, it kind of disrupts where you're at, and it makes things harder to do. Additionally, I've just found like when you kind of know how to manipulate something, when you know what you want to create, you end up doing it. It's really hard to hold back from doing something when you feel like you can do something. So once you have the knowledge of being able to be like, hey, I want this wine to taste like this, I want it to taste like that every year, that's what people like, you're going to just keep trying to do that and forcing the grapes on top of it. So I was just in Austin, Texas, and I stopped at Fredericksburg, which is a place with a ton of wineries in Texas. And one winery I went to, they had pretty quality wine, but one of the first things they said was, so we want to make wine like this, but the Texas climate fights us. So we have to do a lot of things to the wine. And to me, I hear that and I'm like, just make Texas wine. Like, make really good Texas wine. Let it express itself. You don't have to make Italian wine. But I think there's this feeling that consumers want something that they know and trust. But with wine, there's like, if you can step back and just like experience it for what it is, I think there's a lot more beauty in just letting the experience be unique every time. And maybe that means like buying a bottle that you don't like, but honestly, you're probably just going to do that anyway.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, David, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, no. So, I mean, it just sounds like your philosophy towards all of this is really in line with a lot of the values that are shared by Bitcoiners. And I just wonder, like, what's kind of the relationship there? Do you see a tie, like, and has your interest in Bitcoin kind of supported and developed this worldview around kind of calming down and not trying to force things and sort of be kind of being lower time preference and just accepting and aware of your surroundings?
I would say that, I mean, this all like kind of came together at the same point. I started the winery in 2019, didn't make a single sale until 2021 because I was waiting for the wine to age. So I found Bitcoin kind of in the middle of that process as I was maturing into understanding the business. And I would say it's pretty seamless. I mean, as you said, like it totally does all connect very well with it. And in that, it gives me a little bit more, now that I have the understanding of Bitcoin and a little bit more understanding of the benefits of like, and just knowing what low time preference behavior is, it's a little easier for me to commit to that as a business strategy, just with more knowledge. And I can't really say Bitcoin has shaped it, but it does align super well. So it makes it a really fun exercise to do as a business of like, yeah, I'm just going to grow the right way. I'm not going to extend myself too far. I'm going to stay humble and stack wine, I guess. And I don't want to grow too fast. I want to just keep things steady and have a business that I enjoy running for the rest of my life for as long as I want to do it. So within the Bitcoin space, I've just found a ton of people that appreciate that. And it's really nice to be around people who have the same mindset towards life and building. And also, I mean, I'm just a Bitcoiner. So it's nice to like share what I do with people who have similar goals and are trying to get a better world. But it's nice to share what I do with them because I use their products all the time. So it's nice to have something to give back.
Absolutely. So how is Bitcoin, like, how is it explicitly integrated into your business? Have you been, as an entrepreneur, have you encountered Bitcoin and integrated it into like payments or anything like that? And how has that worked out?
So primarily, it's just, I'm just in stacking mode, and selling wine for Bitcoin is how it's integrated into my business. With liquor laws, it's a little bit hard for me to accept Bitcoin for sales across state lines. I have to use a third party that I'm working on orange pilling, and they're very resistant. So there's a little bit of friction there, but I started accepting Bitcoin for wine sales at farmers markets last summer and put a sign out, Bitcoin accepted here, that was just like, look, I'm a Bitcoiner. I just want to be a touch point for people. You know, I want to be like, oh, there's that business. Whoa, they accept Bitcoin. Interesting. Don't think anything of it. And didn't really expect any sales to come from it. Definitely got a lot of boomers coming up to me being like, hey man, be careful. You know, it's down 50%. And I'd be like, brother, it's down 70 and I want yours. So it was a slow start, but then it's just been like, I've started getting more sales in Bitcoin and working on educating the other small businesses around me. And customers come up and sometimes ask questions, sometimes don't, but really it's just there to be a touch point, and someone's going to find Bitcoin when they find it. But I know it takes a lot of touch points to get there. So if I can be one of them, I'm happy for that.
Yeah. Do you, I saw that you were on your site, you were working with a company called Oshi, I think it was. Do you get a lot of like online sales in that where people pay in Bitcoin?
Yeah. So Oshi for now does all of my online Bitcoin sales. And I would say that I'm at least 50% of my online sales are Bitcoin. Part of that is just, I sell all my wine for the most part in person. And I've got on Twitter and people like that. And so the people find me on Twitter through Bitcoin Twitter and buy with Bitcoin. There's a little bit of friction there. You do have to pay with Bitcoin and then make a second transaction to pay for shipping and tax and fiat on my website. But Oshi's an awesome spot. I mean, they have so many awesome Bitcoin companies that sell great goods that are all aligned with pretty much low time preference life, and being healthy and doing things the right way. So they've been a great official, unofficial partner in all of this.
There's actually kind of going back a little bit in our conversation. I'm just super curious here. You built your own house. That's you don't hear that very often, especially not so much anymore. And I'm like, how long did that take? Is it done? Are you happy with it? What would you recommend it to somebody else? Like, I just think that's so awesome. And you kind of said it so casually. You were like, yeah, you know, built a winery, built my own house, etc. Like, that was great.
So my dad built houses for his career. And I pretty much grew up in a house that he built my whole life. So it's a bit normalized for me in that sense. But yeah, so I was working as a geologist in Denver, had started the winery as a second thing that I was doing. And then I was already planning on, I guess I was a little apprehensive about moving back to my 2000 person town, but it was just like, dang, I got to wait a whole nother year for this winery to come to mature, to be able to get to a point where I can even sell wine. So I got to think of something else to do. I'm not going to continue down the geology career path. There's just this opening that I should build a house with my dad. I mean, he's 75 now. This was a couple of years ago. And so it was kind of like, do it now or never do it. And the window was there. So I kind of just went for it. We started in... Well, I guess I moved home in June, and they had started a little bit before me. It was me, my dad, and one other guy, Jorge, who did everything. And I started in June. They had done a tiny bit before, and we finished in June the next year. So I've been in it for almost 2 years now, coming on June, and it's been great. I'm not in the main house, so it's a 3-bed, 2-bath, and then there's a like completely sectioned off 1-bedroom apartment with a separate entrance and everything on the upstairs, and that's where I'm living, with the idea that once I get married and have a kid, move into the main house when I need more space. But I don't know, it was pretty cool. Like, no, I don't want to ever do it again. My body got destroyed. It's so much work, but also it's very fulfilling. Like I live in it, you know. I remember putting up this specific thing that I look at every day, and while I was building it, looking around being like, dang, my kids are going to be running around here one day, and it's on the property that I grew up on. So pretty fulfilling in that regard.
Wow. That was powerful. Thank you for sharing that. I guess I had another question about like how you, I guess you kind of answered this earlier, but with like, you know, low time preference, but did Bitcoin change your perspective on like how you wanted to set up your winery, or was that, did you already kind of have a vision and you were just discovering it? You were just discovering like all at the same time.
I would say that I kind of just jumped it. Like, I'd never made wine before when I started this winery, and my dad had been making wine. So for 10 years, maybe, and had good success. Like, he was never too big commercially. There was a couple years he sold it when he just had a ton of wine, but his wine was like the it wine in my town that has like 8 other wineries. So I kind of knew there was something special in the vineyard and in the way he was doing it. And full context, I grew up on a farm that my dad wanted to grow all his own food. So in that, you know, he planted a vineyard and started making all his own wine too. And so I saw this low time preference lifestyle from the beginning. I just kind of had to figure out a way to make it my own, and I just wanted to start a business. So kind of just jumped in for it. So to say I had a plan is probably not true. And I was just learning as I go and trying to I had to go slowly because wine just takes forever to do. So Bitcoin, I wouldn't say like shapes things. It probably honestly shaped my view of the wine business the least out of anything in my life, just because wine is inherently low time preference and matches up with Bitcoin so much.
That's interesting. I also wanted to ask, so you're talking now about food and growing it. What is pocket steak? Can we get into that?
Of course, my favorite subject. Well, so I just had kind of been like thinking that my diet was holding me back in a lot of ways. Like, I just had all this brain fog and wanted to, just figure things out. And then I met the Meat Mafia guys last summer that came to my house and saw the vineyard and everything, and was like, damn, so they just eat steak all the time. And then I got my first quarter cow and started eating steak a lot more, started feeling a lot better. And then one day I just had a second steak that I was cooking for dinner and brought it skiing, and then realized that was the best ski snack. Plus, you get on the lift and you take a bite out of steak and everyone's like so weirded out and has no idea what's going on. They're either completely disgusted when I offer them a bite, or they call me their hero, that I just had to keep it going.
That's incredible. Yellow, did you have anything?
Yeah, it's all about those caveman vibes, I think.
What?
No, I'm saying I have to try it. I haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, we got to get you some.
Do you put it in a wrapper or something, or straight to the pocket?
I haven't raw dogged it before. I usually go in a plastic bag, but I think I got to upgrade my protection there.
There could be a business there selling pocket steak holders.
There is. There's got to be. Come on, someone.
Always use protection for your meat, guys.
Yes, always use protection for your meat. You don't want lint on your pocket steak.
Excellent. All right. Well, that's a good reminder to announce that you guys, anybody listening who wants to raise your hand and ask a question or get involved in the conversation, just raise your hand and let us know. We can make you a speaker here. Thank you, Yellow, for that astute. Okay, David, I don't know if you have more questions, but I'm really interested in entrepreneurship and Bitcoin, so I could just even go into that more and just ask more about that, Ben. Can take this any direction you want, but in the absence of anything else to talk about, I would love to hear more about, as an entrepreneur, like what advice would you give other potential food entrepreneurs, people who are inspired by the idea of like growing their own food or starting their own vineyard, starting a loan type preface business like that, or even like building a house or like kind of embarking on these major projects. Is there anything you would offer to people who are thinking about making a major shift and kind of diving into a new lifestyle like that? Ooh, maybe we lost Ben temporarily.
Hey, can you hear me now?
Yes, now we can.
Sorry, my headphones cut out, and I was trying to get that figured out. But to your question about food entrepreneurs specifically, I mostly interact with a lot of farmers that kind of, there's some that are really good business people and some that just kind of want to make it and as a farmer and just live a good life growing their own food, eating their own food. And the hardest thing is, one of the biggest benefits of wine is getting to that shelf stability, just extending the lifetime of your product. Because if you pick something that morning, if you pick some produce that morning, it's just, you got to sell it that day. And so it's a bit hard for me to give advice just because wine is such the perfect product. I mean, think about it. Like, it's a shelf stable product that you make once a year and it gets more valuable and better with age. So it's kind of just a ridiculous thing to have, but I'm approaching it from a long-term time preference, as far as like, I want to grow my education of running a business with my ability to run a business and extending out, just building slowly and doing whatever it takes in the short term. So just get to the next point, but keep that long-term vision in place is super important. So I don't know. I would say just go for it. If you have something in mind, I mean, that's the value of my story, is just, I didn't know what I was doing and I went for it and it worked out because I knew it was what I wanted to do. And if you're doing something that you're not that psyched on, you're probably not going to do it very well and someone's going to do it better than you. But if you're psyched on what you're doing, you're going to put a lot of energy into it and do it well.
Yeah. I think that's terrific advice. And also I did have another question regarding kind of basically on this topic, but do you get the impression that the like all natural, all natural wine, like grass-fed steak, anti-seed oils, like, is that movement kind of like growing in your opinion? Cause at least from my perspective, it seems like you're creating a product, this natural wine, that's like really primed for the direction that people's interests are going, at least Bitcoiners, with respect to food and wine and stuff.
It's definitely not just Bitcoiners. There's, I would say, a growing movement within a lot of different segments of society to be more healthy and find the diet, the what works for them. And there's a lot of people that find different answers. And, I can't say what works for everyone, but specifically within wine, I have a ton of people that come up and be like, oh my God, it's natural wine. I look everywhere for natural wine and I can't find it. It's all I want to drink because you get headaches from conventional wine. It's kind of ridiculous, the difference that the difference in how you feel after drinking a conventional wine and a natural wine. Like, my most visceral experience was this last winter. I was just hanging out with some friends and I drink my wine all the time. So bringing my wine up to a party is like not that special for me. So I went out and I bought a $100 bottle and was like, well, I'm going to drink this. We can open whatever, you guys drink whatever you want. And halfway through my first glass, I got this gnarly headache from this wine. And all I did was dump it out didn't drink any water, didn't wait any time, and just poured my wine in the glass, and the headache went away. There's probably some psychological stuff with that, but that was a very visceral experience of, oh, cool. So I just get headaches from conventional wine and I don't from natural wine. People are finding out about seed oils slowly, I think. It's definitely rampant within the Bitcoin community, but like that started somewhere else and spread to the Bitcoin community because people are just kind of looking for truth. They're looking for the sources, the root of all these problems. And it's going to take a long time. I mean, I was at I was pouring my wine at a beef event for the National Western Stock Show. And I said something to this lady about like, man, the rancher who was next to me serving food with me. And I was like, man, you ever get those like that what that person just said told me that they know nothing about wine. And she's like, I know what you mean. When I hear people like grass-fed beef, I know they know nothing about beef. And I was taken aback because I'm so in on the grass-fed. I feel so much better after eating grass-fed beef and understanding the, I mean, I don't know a ton, but I understand the omega-3 to omega-6 ratio is so much more healthy, and I'm eating a healthier animal, so I feel better. And so even these producers aren't totally aware of what they're producing and the effects that has on people. So it's a long ways to go, but I see it for sure, because I'm a place where people go to seek out those people that are seeking out that healthy, that more natural product. Obviously, they come and find me and they tell me how hard it is to find, but I'm seeing these products more and more. So it's getting easier and easier to find. And that only happens because demand is growing.
So that's really interesting. I know that we've all heard this from different angles, but do you have a brief overview or description about the seed oil issue and related? I don't know if you're an expert in that, but just to kind of like bring the people who are listening up to speed on what we're talking about. And then also follow up is, in your specific field, obviously, which is wine, like, could you summarize in a little bit more detail what the issues are there chemically? Like, why, what is the deal with the headaches? I understand that at a high level, there are these chemicals and so on, but do you know, like, kind of pharmacologically what's going on there and what could explain this? I mean, this is crazy. Like, everybody associates headaches with red wine, right? That's a really common thing. To hear that it's possibly just an artifact of chemical corruption of the wine is really a fascinating topic that I've never heard of before. Is it related to the seed oil issue? I mean, what should we make of that?
I just want to say I'm definitely neither an expert in neither field. From what I know about seed oils is I first started looking at, or I'm trying to understand like omega-3 fatty acids and just what the right diet should be for me after I got a lot of concussions and head injuries. And so I just realized that like I don't want a ton of inflammation in my brain. That's what happens when I get a head injury. And omega-6s generally cause a bit more, they're more inflationary, and omega-3s are disinflationary. All right, man, I might be getting my turn to make that up here, but omega-3s cause disinflation. Is that an economic term? And omega-6s cause inflammation. And if I'm eating, there's always going to be some of both, but grass-fed animals tend to have a higher omega-3 to omega-6 ratio. So there's more disinflammatory, effects from those foods. When it comes to seed oils, those omega-6 to omega-3 ratios are just crazy. Like, there is so much omega-6 compared to the omega-3, which means they're extremely inflammatory, which makes me feel just kind of bloated and gross. And I don't have much more to say outside of that, because it's a bit more, along with the wine, it's just a bit more of a, I feel it and I see a little bit of the science and I feel it in my body. So I'm going to go with it. With the wine, I don't know the specific chemical interactions that are giving headaches, but my hunch is that most people are like, oh, because your wine doesn't have sulfites, I don't get headaches. And that's true. Those two things are related, but I think that sulfites are just a poster child. And all I can say is, like, some winemakers come, they visit my place, or I talk to them about what they're doing, and they're just like, oh yeah, so if you want it to taste a little bit more like this, you add this chemical and this chemical and this chemical. And, you know, they're probably generally, for the most part, harmless chemicals, but in higher doses, in all mixed together, it's just a lot of stuff going into your wine that doesn't need to be there. Wine is this natural phenomenon that is, like, created on its own by nature. Like, I don't do much to the wine. I just physically put it in different places to make it. Nature makes the wine for me, and doing anything more than that is just overthinking things and corrupting an awesome natural phenomenon. But I can't really give you the specifics on why you get headaches, because it's still something I'm trying to understand myself.
No, that was still very helpful. Thank you. I hadn't really heard of it broken down like that. Yeah, I had heard of the sulfites thing, now that I think about it. And to hear that it's just part of the story, it's a really, really interesting idea. I also like the way that you characterize, like, the creation of wine as something that you're just sort of, like, allowing to happen, managing, and that, you know, I think it was a mistake, but it kind of created a connection for me, right? Bitcoiners hate inflammation and they hate inflation. It's like, we just, you know, these types of words that sound the same, we just respond poorly to all of them. No, that's really great. David, do you have anything else?
Yeah, I think that, you know, one thing that I thought was really interesting, I was listening to you, Ben, talking on another podcast about the soil and why that, like, the soil matters in, you know, where you make your wine in Colorado. And I'm wondering if you could just give us a brief overview about that and, you know, like, why, how the different soils affect the different, you know, wines that people produce.
Yeah, so the type of soil indicates the type of nutrients, the ability for the plant to pull up those nutrients. It's just going to change everything about what goes into the plant and then what is expressed in the grape. And so that's like a deep subject of, let's talk about soils that come from basalt. Let's talk about soils that come from granite. And every single one has different characteristics. My soil is very alluvial, as in I'm in the bottom of a river valley. So it's sediments and really deep before I hit any rocks. So those kind of soils produce a little bit of a lighter bodied wine. And so my Pinot is on the lighter side of Pinots, but has a lot of fruit flavor from the high altitude and this awesome acid that really pulls it all together. So it expresses really nicely. But I think the coolest part about the soil is more thinking about the water and how the plants get their water. And most, I don't want to say most, but a lot of grapevines are grown with drip irrigation. And definitely the majority of grapes are grown with general, they're irrigated. And so we will generally maybe irrigate once a year if it's a really dry year, just to make sure the vines don't die. But the idea is that we want those grape roots, which naturally grow super deep, to grow as deep as possible. And the reason that is because we want those grape roots to soak up as much nutrients as possible from super diverse parts of the soil. So if we're drip irrigating and the water is pretty much only coming from this one drip spot on the surface, the roots have no incentive to really grow anywhere else. I mean, they're gonna, because that's what they naturally do. They seek out new sources, but they're gonna be clumped at that spot for pretty much in its entirety. And that depletes that soil pretty quickly, because that's where the roots are taking all the nutrients. So you have to continually be replenishing that soil with fertilizer, with new nutrients, just adding things constantly to the vineyard to keep a healthy balance in that plant. And I don't really think that people know how to keep a healthy balance in natural systems that are that complex. I mean, I think the less human interaction that's done is going to create a healthier and healthier balance. But essentially the plant starts to become whatever fertilizer you use. So hopefully you're using good fertilizer, but we're forcing those grape roots to go super far down, just connects with all the soil around and draws in nutrients from a lot of places, so our soil doesn't get depleted. And if we do add anything, it's just chicken manure from our chicken coop. So it's just, like I said, trying to be as hands-off within the vineyard as possible to get a more connected ecosystem, which ends up creating more beautiful wine, in my opinion.
Wow, I had no idea about the irrigation. That's really interesting. I frankly just assumed you would obviously irrigate. That's amazing that you're able to grow without that and that makes a difference. It makes perfect sense, actually, but it's just never thought about it before, because we have drip lines throughout our area here, and it's just kind of like the way you always set one up whenever you're planting something. So, wow.
It depends on where you are. Like, you probably can't do it everywhere, but maybe you shouldn't be growing grapes everywhere. And yep. Like I said, we will irrigate once a year if necessary, but grape roots do specifically grow extremely deep, and grapes are an extremely resilient plant. So it's pretty cool to just be able to put the grapes in a spot where they can succeed in that way and let them do their thing, because that's what they're built to do.
Amazing. All right. Well, we've been going 45 minutes here. I wonder, so would you direct anybody in the audience to some resources that have inspired you, inspired your thinking, or educated you about your business, about wine, steak, about Bitcoin? What are some resources that have really like shaped your worldview?
So I would say, if you're looking to learn about health and from Bitcoiners and from people with a similar mindset, the Meat Mafia podcast is a killer resource. They've definitely taught me a lot. These days, for Bitcoin content, I pretty much listen to Marty and Odell, who I met Marty or I met Odell on that same trip that the Meat Mafia guys were here. I didn't really know who he was, and those two groups of people were at my house, and the Oshi people and Ibex people. It was like this Beef Initiative conference just changed my life, because it fixed my diet. It got me accepting Bitcoin for my wine, and got me to be a huge fan of Matt Odell and what Marty and him are doing. As far as wine goes, like, I obviously make natural wine and ship it all over the United States, but a lot of people that are seeking natural wines will buy from dry farm wines. I haven't like looked totally into everything they do. I can't give them like the full carte blanche recommendation of mine, but I imagine that's a good place to go to just start finding natural wines around. And I would say, if you live anywhere where there is a winery, just go check them out, go ask, see what they're doing. And if they're not making natural wine, like, it's not ideal, but it's better to support local and bad than non-local and bad, as far as like practices go. Anything you can do to support your local economy that's what I've learned from Bitcoin, is just support the people you care about.
Man, that's awesome. And I think that localism is, very much in line with Bitcoin and, you know, what some people think Bitcoin could bring about, which is a more like, you know, smaller parallel economies that are all like running, you know, in tandem, where people are like just using Bitcoin to transact.
Yeah. So where I live is a lot of food producers. There are a lot of small food producers that come here because it's an amazing spot to grow. And so I kind of grew up with the barter economy, where we would trade a lot of times wine, but any food we had for any food that someone else had. And those relationships are just super, super firm, super deep. Like, you really care about the person who makes your goat cheese, because you love their goat cheese and you want to help them out. And so anything you can do to connect with your community, your producers, and support the businesses that you want to see thrive through if we're looking at potentially like hard times down the road, you got to start supporting the businesses that you want to be there, that you want to see through there. At the end, and getting them orange pilled, getting them on Bitcoin, getting them on money that's not going to hyperinflate is a great start, but also just supporting, they're not going to listen to you until you're a loyal customer. So if you want, it's like definitely a positive feedback loop, where if there's these amazing things in your life, if you support them, they will be there in the future. But if not, they may willow and die.
Hey, that actually brings up a thought. So you're talking about these smaller circles and systems of barter and trust. Do you see an opportunity to create little miniature circular economies using Bitcoin? Like, you know, as you speak to these people who obviously trust you and probably learn from you about your interest in Bitcoin, is that something you see on the horizon? Is that like a way of driving adoption?
So this is going back to me just wanting to be a touch point for Bitcoin. Is all of last summer I'm selling wine for Bitcoin, and people would see that people come up for Bitcoin and be like, do you get any sales for that? They would ask me like, do you get any sales for that? And yeah, this guy just drove 5 hours to come buy wine because I accepted Bitcoin. And they see that and they're pumped on it, but it's going to take them a little while. And all of last year with the price going down, that's what they look at. So I think it's going to take a combination of the price going up, because that people just listen to that, and just seeing other success stories. And so the longer I'm out there selling wine for Bitcoin, the more likely people will be curious, adopt, ask questions, whatever it is. Funnily enough, I have a network of Bitcoiners that I do a lot of trading with, and we almost never use Bitcoin. We pretty much always just trade goods. So that's kind of funny that we don't even use it. But it definitely, when I get paid in Bitcoin from someone, I feel like, just from the merchant's perspective, right? You could give me your dollars, I could go buy Bitcoin with that. Or you could buy, spend and replace, or buy with Strike, where you send dollars and I receive Bitcoin. But if you are sending me Bitcoin, I kind of know that you care about me in a way that you're trying to give me unconfiscatable money. You're trying to put me in a better place. And if I have my set up together, I can accept it in a non-KYC way and build a non-KYC stack. And that's huge, looking into any sort of uncertainty in the future, of just having unconfiscatable money that no one knows and no one knows about. And if all your producers have that, then all your favorite producers are going to be in a much better spot to succeed anything that goes down the way.
Yeah, 100%. Awesome. All right. Well, guys, this is last call. If anybody wants to raise their hand and ask a question or get involved in the discussion, feel free to do so now, and we'll give you the floor. But in the meantime, I just want to thank Ben again for coming on. Ben, this has been really fascinating. You've made me very hungry and thirsty throughout this conversation. Obviously, I'm sure you hear that all the time. I'm really interested in getting into natural wine. Honestly, I hadn't even thought about it. And I do get headaches. And I do drink less wine because of it. But I do love it. And so it's really interesting to kind of find this new opportunity. It's cool. Definitely think more about that pocket stakeholder idea. If you wind up doing it, I want to be named on the patent with you, we can maybe sell it in our store. Speaking of our store, we are Coinbits. Actually, wait, before I do my little closing, Ben, do you want to just plug like where we should, what do you want us to do?
Well, I want someone to invent a pocket stakeholder first off. So if anyone's in the audience that does that kind of thing, reach out. But I ship wine all over the United States from my website, peonylanewine.com. It's all in my bio, and I do Bitcoin sales through the Oshi app. Just reach out if you have any questions. I mean, there's a lot of different natural wineries. I think I make great wine, but just being more healthy, being more cognizant of what you're going to do is going to create a better world. And I'll just be happy to live in a world with a lot more localism and better wines around. So support your local winery.
Amazing.
Ben,
thank you again.
Ben, one more question, Ben. What is a pocket stake, and does it give you better success with women?
Yo, I don't really talk about my dating all that much on Twitter, but I will say that I put a pocket stake on my dating profile things, and it's like basically all the conversations are, and it does all right. So it makes it a lot more fun, definitely, when you have something no one knows what pocket stake is.
it's I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. So it definitely piqued girls' attention, I guess.
Okay, nice way to avoid both questions I asked, but I'll accept it.
Wait, I thought I answered them. What did I avoid?
It's okay. You avoided them. Now we know your true colors. You're not a real pocket. You're not a real pocket staker.
Oh man, I honestly like pocket steak is way better for ski season than it's going to be for biking season. But those 80 degree days when I'm biking, I'm still going to have to put a steak in my pocket.
Isn't pocket steak almost the same as beef jerky?
No, come on, get out of here. Pocket steak is hydrating. You're out there skiing, you're thirsty, but it's hard to carry a water bottle, so you carry your water and your steak. It's like,
right.
Plus, like, what if you ever see, like, have you watched Napoleon Dynamite? You know the scene where Napoleon rides up on the bike and Uncle Rico grabs Kip's steak and throws it at him, hits him in the face. It's also a weapon. So try doing that with beef jerky.
That's weird that you bring up that movie, because I was already thinking about the pocket tots, right? The pocket that was the Napoleon Dynamite.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I see. It can all be traced back to that.
Maybe it is like one of my favorite movies of childhood. So I just kind of grabbed onto that gif of Uncle Rico, because I think it's so funny. But I don't know, man. Pocket steak is it's a really awesome snack. It tastes really good. And like when you're getting ready in the morning, it takes like 5 minutes to cook a steak. It's not very long. So it's a super easy thing to just grab and go and put in your pocket. And then the whole day you're like, oh, well, I have a steak. I'm just going to eat that. And you eat a lot less junk.
That's awesome. All right. That's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. And so on that note, Ben is a Bitcoiner and a wine producer, a homesteader, and overall awesome dude who's spreading the good word about localism, wine, and food. We are Coinbits. We are a Bitcoin-only app for onboarding and orange pilling friends and family. We make it easy to buy Bitcoin, send Bitcoin to self-custody, deposit your Bitcoin with us so that we can custody it for you if you would like to obtain like a cash advance against your Bitcoin. That's coming really soon. We offer Bitcoin IRAs. That's going to be released in the next few weeks here. And what's cool about a Bitcoin IRA is that you can convert an existing 401k or IRA into Bitcoin. So it's kind of like finding piles of Bitcoin that you already had. So we're really excited for that. That's coming out pretty soon now. It's just in its development testing phases here. So go to coinbits.app. You can sign up for the IRA wait list there. We'll keep you up to date. We can give you early access as soon as it's ready. You could learn about Coinbits Cash, which is the cash advance product that is also imminently going to be released. You can join the wait list for that one too. We have all the different features that you might expect from a Bitcoin on-ramp. We do it better in terms of UX from anyone else though. So we make it like the easiest in the industry to self-custody, to auto-send to your private wallets, like I said, buy Bitcoin on a schedule. You could do it daily, you could do it weekly, you can also do it bi-weekly, and that's really cool because you can synchronize your DCA to your paycheck the day you get paid, and then you kind of just pay yourself first and thank yourself later.
Does bi-weekly mean twice a week or every other week?
Sean, that would be semi-weekly.
I don't know if you right? I think if I've looked it up, it could mean both.
I think semi-weekly is look it up. DM us your Wiktionary.
I think it can be interpreted both ways. I'm just putting it out there.
We'll hack it. All right.
Sean, stop drinking so fast, man.
Stop what? Yellow, I can't hear you. Sound muffled over there. Too much fur?
Yes. In fact, we also offer semi-weekly. You would just have to set up two. Yeah, yeah,
and the roundups,
honestly. Sean, why don't you tell us what roundups is?
Roundups is when you're spending. You know, you go out and about, you're doing your daily spins, and whatever your change is, when it goes up to a certain amount that you choose. I think I've chosen like $20, so when my change equals $20, Like if I buy something, it's like $13.55. Well, then the rest of that 45 cents will get added to a roundup. And as that roundup adds up to my $20, then boom, I can buy Bitcoin. It buys Bitcoin automatically for me in a roundup. I don't know if that made sense or not.
Wow, that was great. I mean, I think that was awesome. I think we might have to revise our website copy. No, it was actually great. That's exactly what it is. You did wonderfully. Thank you. That is what roundups is. And that was our first feature way back in the day, and people still love it. And yeah, so check us out. Coinbits, not Coinbase. We also have instructions for how to close your Coinbase account on our website. So check that out too. You want coinbits.app. And thanks again, everyone who attended today. It's been lovely seeing you all here again. We do this every week. We also have a weekly Bitcoin briefing on Wednesdays about the news. So check that out. Wednesday, midday, lunch hour. But every Friday, we do an in-depth interview. And so we hope that you attend them in the future. So thanks, everyone, and have a wonderful weekend. And we'll see you all later. Bye, everyone.
Coinbits.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Bitcoin Roundup podcast presented by Coinbits. So what do you think of the conversation? Share your thoughts with us on Twitter at Coinbits app, and be sure to subscribe to be notified of our next episode release. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the Bitcoin Roundup podcast.